Inside Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe, the podcast from OVB Online on the Tour de France. For 3 weeks, we accompany team manager Ralf Denk and the biggest and most successful German cycling team through the Tour de France. Do you have questions for Ralf Denk? Send them to tobias.rufer@bmedia.de. And now enjoy the new episode.
The 13th stage of the Tour de France had it all. A huge breakaway group, a 100-kilometer chase by the sprinters, a podium attack in the general classification by Tom Pidcock, and the victory of Mauro Schmidt.
The Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe team was affected by all of this several times over. As always, we will break everything down systematically, and for that, I welcome our team manager, Ralf Denk, as always. Hello and greetings from the Vosges to Rosenheim. Yes, Ralf, we have a lot to talk about and need to discuss. I would like to go through the whole thing chronologically. First of all, I would say that after a long battle, everything actually looked quite good because the breakaway group formed at the front, which was large, but included two of your riders, Tim van Dijk and Maxim van Gils. Did everything go according to plan at first, or was the group actually a bit too big for you? Both. Well, I predicted yesterday that it would be a day for the breakaway. I was right.
We were represented and we were able to execute it as planned. That means we didn't want to waste our energy from kilometer one, but we gambled until the group was finally set. Then we were represented with two men. That was all great. That it got so big and that second group caught up, well, that shouldn't have happened, but Trek wasn't represented in the first group, or Little Trek wasn't, and they really wanted to be there. That's why they managed to do it with Mats Pedersen for the intermediate sprint. And yes, the group ran well despite its size, and the group had built up an 8-minute lead and they held that more or less. They came in at 7:32, the group. That was real bike racing. We had 2,400 meters of climbing today, over 200 kilometers and an average speed of 49. So there was pressure on all day. I just spoke briefly with Remco or Florian. They were all few real bike racing today. Mm-hmm. I can imagine that.
If I want to be mean, I could ask, did the group perhaps ride a bit too well because we still had a candidate up front with Tom Pidcock who could potentially still play a role in the general classification? You said it was really intense up front. How did you perceive the situation as that gap kept getting bigger and bigger?
I didn't get nervous because he was 11 minutes or over 11 minutes behind before the stage, Tom Pidcock. And he didn't give that time away voluntarily. He lost it because he's not quite as good as the best ones up front. And today he made a big move. He's currently in fourth place in the general classification. That means Florian Lipowitz also lost a place, which, however, is no drama for us. And we think that Tom Pidcock, he is a great racer, Olympic champion in mountain biking and Tour de France stage winner, stood on the world podium last year. But I believe that he does not have the form from the last world there. And I believe that he will finish the Tour de France in a top 10 spot, but not towards the podium. And that is why it is no big drama for us right now that he is currently in fourth place. Okay.
Which then led to the situation where you had someone in Van Gils on the final climb who even attacked and proactively tried to get away. At the same time, you were responsible back in the peloton for ensuring a fast pace because of the gap.
Isn't that actually a dilemma one doesn't necessarily want to get into? Or were you not nervous even then? No, that didn't matter in that case because there were 8 minutes between us and we represented our interests at the back in the reduced main peloton. We didn't want to let the gap increase to 12 minutes to 15 minutes.
That is why our riders, especially Mattia Cataneo, took part in the pace setting. On the other hand, we never wanted to close the gap, but we just wanted to keep it steady or reduce it slightly. And that was the strategy. Up front, Maxim fought hard for the stage win. In the end, he finished fourth on the stage.
Not what we all hoped for, but he rode a strong race. Yes, I want to address that in a moment. Perhaps just briefly on the situation, Florian Lipowitz also said the chase work wasn't just up to us, because Tom Pidcock up front wasn't just a threat to you, but actually to all the riders in the general classification, maybe excluding Tadej Pogacar.
Would you have liked a bit more support there, or were you able to control everything within the scope of your team?
No, that was an alliance to the first ones to get nervous, because Pidcock was up front, were Team Bahrain victorious. They were the first to ride. Then Lidl Trek joined in, and then we joined in too. So we didn't waste a huge amount of energy there. But we also wanted to show our presence, and that's why we rode along.
All right, then let's move on to what you just mentioned. Maxim Van Gils super positioned at the front. There was an attack towards the end of the climb before reaching the top.
Was that the call for him to try it there, or what was the idea behind it?
We still had several teams with two or even more teammates in the lead group at the time, and the attack was intended to ensure it would at least end up man-to-man. That worked in part because Jake Walula, the team of the winner, Mauro Schmidt, today was still represented with two men. Also, Team UAE Emirates was represented by two men, and Maxim was alone, because we knew that Van Dijk from our team is not the greatest climber. And that is always a disadvantage when a lead group like that heads toward the finish, when you are outnumbered. But we could not prevent that. Jayco Alula were there with two men, and they ultimately ended up winning the stage.
Is that really such a big advantage, being able to play that card? I mean, at one point they even had four guys up front. After the climb, there were still two, and UAE also had two left. Is there much you can do about that, or what should have gone differently for Van Gils to have a chance? Because in the final sprint, he was basically the next fastest after Tom Pidcock.
That is to some extent also playing roulette, and you only have certain cartridges, and when they are spent, they are spent. And when you have the numerical advantage, then instead of 8 cartridges, you have 16 cartridges. And the probability that you hit something is definitely higher, and that is why it is much, much more helpful when there are two of you. And Team Jayco Alula, they were two. Not only was Mauro Schmidt up front, but Luke Plapp as well. And both are great racers. And in the end, they used their numerical advantage and deservedly won.
Definitely. How, let's call it, disappointed are you that it didn't work out? You just said you don't really get that many chances. Does Van Gils have any bullets left to try the whole thing again on a similar stage? I mean, we already talked about it in the preview. He had a broken pelvis in February, was completely out for 5 weeks, has ridden himself back into impressive form, in my opinion, and is now really right up there when it comes to stages like this. What kind of impression do you have of him? Does he still have power, or was that really his limit today? No, there are still one or two stages coming up that might suit him just as well as today's.
And if the situation is right, we will try again. But yes, of course, we didn't win today. We wanted to win, and naturally the mood on the bus isn't yoy, yeah? So it's rather somber. But you can't blame Maxim at all. He was our man today. He made the jump into the lead group. He fought like a lion. And from that perspective, everything is good. All right. Ralph, I would like to talk to you about another topic, which feels like it's getting bigger for you guys.
We already teased it a bit in the preview. We have touched on the topic every now and then. Today it is definitely time, and that is about your young talent. Under 19 and under 23 team, there was news today, for example, about Max Bock.
at the start of the 62nd Ostertour, a top race for young riders. He took second place in the time trial. There are constant reports about Lorenzo Finn, who won the Giro Next Gen. We have Karl and Emil Herzog, who keep making headlines, just to throw a few names out there that we'll be discussing shortly. Can you tell me a bit about your young riders? What is your approach there and who is particularly promising? Yes, the young talent, we call the young talent rookies.
That is the under 19 and the under 23 class. It is very, very close to our hearts, also due to our history. We have been running an under 19 team since 2007. It is very close to our hearts, but of course, we also want to profit from it. We are in high performance sports here.
It is different from football. You do not have to do this. You can also race in the World Team without being involved in youth development.
But part of our strategy paper is that the next generation is very, very important to us. And the dream is to one day win the Tour de France with one of our own. That means someone who has gone through our under 19 and under 23 teams and eventually wins the Tour de France or makes it to the podium, right? But definitely a guy of our own. And that's one thing where you can tell a nice story. But on the other hand, it's, of course, easier to work with people you've known since they were 16, since they were 17. And that's also when you get to know the riders, what's good about them and what their quirks are. But you never know that when you sign a 24-year-old, then you have, like at work, a 1 hour or 2 hour interview, and then you decide for the rider or you decide against the rider. But there is no probationary period in professional cycling. That means you then sign a 3 year contract with the 24-year-old. With the residual risk, will it even work out? If you sign a racing driver who has been with us since he was 16 or 17, it is much easier because then I know exactly who he ticks. And that is, of course, also a reason why we are doing all this. Can you tell us what this path, this vision of producing the next tour winner from our own ranks currently looks like?
Who are the most promising candidates where you would say these are the ones who could be ready in a few years? Well, I don't want to name any names now and build up pressure, but in our opinion, we do have one or two who might be able to do it, or perhaps one or two great future classics riders.
And we are naturally looking in cycling and road cycling, but we are also looking increasingly at other cycling disciplines. So for us, cyclocross, for example, is also interesting. Mountain biking is interesting for us. Track cycling is also interesting for us. And if someone emerges from another sport, then we also look at them very, very closely. We found someone last year in Lennart Kemner, who is now riding for Team Tudor, but we actually found him in speed skating. We found Florian Lipowitz in biathlon, and we are not yet at the point where we screen all endurance sports with the same intensity that we currently screen cycling. But that is also part of our mission to expand that even further, to generate even more data, because perhaps the Tour de France winner of 2035 or 2040 is currently still playing soccer.
You never know. You shouldn't mention any names, or do you want to? We have a listener question about that from Axel Jacken. He is very interested in your plans for Karl Herzog. He asks, will he still be riding for Grenke Otto Edder next season? To clarify, that is the name of your under 19 team.
Or is a move to the under 23 team conceivable, even though he is only 17 on paper? No, he actually has to move up. You are only allowed to race in the under 19 category for 2 years, and Karl Herzog will race for our under 23 team next year.
Okay, one of the great German prospects, I would think. We have a few other names as well, but what also interests me, and we have touched on this a bit, is how the French handle their young talent, for example, Decathlon with Paul Sakses. You have, or rather you have always said that you want to develop your young riders more carefully. How does that work in practice? So when do you say, okay, we'll give someone who is maybe, I don't know, how old must they be, 20, 21, 22, the chance to ride in the world tour? Yes, primarily it's about how do I approach that with the training and the competition load?
So that means how do I increase the training? You have to know that in the under 19 category, the guys ride about 15,000 kilometers. The professional riders ride 30 to 35,000 kilometers a year. In my opinion, it is more sustainable to slowly increase that from 15,000 towards 30,000. But you can, of course, also increase it quickly.
The colleagues from the Decathlon team and Paul Sexes increased that very, very quickly. So the training load, and it is public, of Paul Sexes, it is immense, even though the guy is only 19 and I witnessed it this morning. We were together with Decathlon at the hotel today. The hotel is already being besieged by fans early in the morning because of Paul Sexes.
And the guy is 19 years old, so he really has to take a lot. He is that is the hope of the cycling nation.
And I'm really curious how that turns out for him, how things continue for him. I wish him well because I know him personally. He is a fine guy, also a down-to-earth guy, but it is truly enormous what is pouring in, both from the competition load. He's riding the Tour de France right away as his first. He has never ridden another three-week tour before. He has the pressure of the entire nation and, of course, his training so that he can even compete at this level from, I don't want to say 0 to 100, but certainly increased from 30 to 90. And it remains to be seen how well the boy handles that.
Yes, but that means for you, you don't have this training load in the under 19 and under 23 categories that a Paul Sexes has yet. It only comes once he is out of the under 23 category. We have rather chosen the traditional path for our guys, starting the whole thing a bit more slowly.
The best ones currently in our under 23 team are definitely Lorenzo Finn, then Maganotti, and then we also have Davide Donati. Those are three Italians.
Those are certainly very, very talented racers, but here too, we still keep a protective hand over them and do not let them train towards 30,000 kilometers per year.
All right, so I managed to get three names out of you. Thank you for the assessment, and we are curious to see when they will join the big stage. As I said, anyone who follows the junior classes a bit won't be able to avoid your team anyway. No, well, in the youth sector, we take it seriously, as I said, but we are also creating some great successes there.
We won the under 23 Paris-Roubaix with Davide Donati. We won the under 23 Giro d'Italia with Lorenzo Finn. Last year, we were the second best team in the world in the under 23 rankings and the best team in the world in the under 19 category.
Well, my people who are responsible for the youth development are doing a fantastic job, and I think we are on the right track. But we can also hear the resources can always be greater. You can always spend more money on scouts and so on. But that is also limited for us. And that is why we also want to grow organically here not go from 0 to 100 here either regarding the infrastructure for the rookies. So far, it is working well. You have listed the successes.
Ralph, let's wrap up the background topic and look ahead to tomorrow because it's going to be really tough. If you look at the profile, there isn't a single flat meter. There are four climbs, three of them category one. It goes completely through the forces. What do you expect from tomorrow?
Yes, tomorrow is for me already a major showdown for the riders who are likely fighting for the podium here. It is a roller coaster ride through the Vosges with almost 4,000 meters of climbing, then finishing up at Le Morgstein. I know the climb. We have ridden up there before in the Tour de France. I think that tomorrow will be a very clear race for the favorites. I see fewer breakaways tomorrow. There will be a breakaway group, but I do not think they will make it to the finish. And on the final climb, the best riders of this Tour de France will duel. And I hope that our guys, Remco and Florian, with support from Jai Hindley and hopefully also Maxim van Gils, will perform at their best tomorrow.
All right, that answers everything. We will look at it tomorrow. That is it for today. We are looking forward to tomorrow's stage. Thank you very much, Ralf Denk.
You are very welcome, and I wish you a nice evening and best regards.
That was the latest edition of Inside Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe, the podcast from OVB Online on the Tour de France. You can find the podcast on all common podcatchers and on the websites of OVB Media and iPen Media. Thanks for listening and see you in the next episode.